Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. BetterHelp recently surveyed over 16,000 people and found that while 75% of people believe it's wise to seek support, only 27% of Americans are in therapy, and people stay silent to avoid being judged. BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching you with the right therapist, because we're all better with help. Visit betterhelp.com/stopthestigma for their first ever State of Stigma report, the latest in mental health research. This is an ad by BetterHelp. BetterHelp recently surveyed over 16,000 people and found that while 75% of people believe it's wise to seek support, only 27% of Americans are in therapy, and people stay silent to avoid being judged. BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching you with the right therapist, because we're all better with help. Visit betterhelp.com/stopthestigma for their first ever State of Stigma report, the latest in mental health research.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
Yes, Dateline dropped their bombshell reporting just the other night with brand new information on the Brian Koberger case. More information that, incidentally, does not point to him not being the killer. Of course, he's innocent till proven guilty, but there's more that does not look all that good. Joining me to discuss, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. Jen, I know you watched it as well, and it was fascinating. There was a lot of stuff in there that we had seen before, but they certainly got some new pieces and pieces I think a lot of us have been wondering about for quite some time. What were some of the things that stood out to you in that Dateline report?
Well, I think from a truly sort of graphic and horrific and grab you from, you know, the point of view that this isn't a movie. This isn't Scream. This isn't Friday the 13th. This is real. When they discussed Ethan Chapin's legs being carved into, that for me, I know that seems like a small detail, but it was actually a huge detail for me because of the loathing and the hate and the just everything that came out with that action.
Yeah.
And knowing that the Chapins have known about that all this time, how difficult it must be for the family. So that jumped out at me, Tony, and many other things, but that one was the real one that got me.
I mean, and it plays, if we're understanding Brian Koberger to be the person that I think a lot of us suspect he is, having the issues with the women, the jealousy of others that are getting these women and he's not. If that's his thing with this, carving into Ethan's leg, I mean, I hate getting gross because it's just, ugh. But I mean, it's a piece of the case. I mean, what does that tell you about his mindset? The fact that he went to that degree in, whoever did this went to that degree in the process of murdering these people. It's unneeded. It's unnecessary. It's not one of the things you need to do to just kill the person. That's passion. That's some sort of hate or something.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And really we found out also that it would seem he was sound asleep, you know, drinking all night. It was 2 a.m. They'd been at this big fraternity party. And he slit his artery, right?
Yeah.
Carotid, I would believe. So there was no need. This wasn't about incapacitating him so he couldn't run or anything like that. And I'm not even sure he needed to kill him, Tony.
No.
You know, at that point, Xana's dead and he could have left. But no, he not only felt the need to kill him, he felt the need to mutilate him. Mm-hmm. And I think that just shows the mindset of the torment, the hate of looking at somebody like Ethan and saying, you are everything I could never be.
Yeah. I mean, I want to shiver when I think about that because it's so creepy and it's so, so dark. there was a lot in this, and there were some big pieces. I want to talk about another piece that stood out to me that I don't think got a ton of attention, at least as the Twitter sphere with everybody talking about this. The phone call to the parents the next morning, Brian calling mom and dad. Oh, to be a fly on the wall to hear that phone call. I mean, I'm not thinking he's like, hey, mom, dad, guess what? I just slaughtered four college kids. But I really wonder what the hell that conversation was about, because it lasted a good deal of time. I what are they talking about there? Like, hey, you having pancakes this morning? Oh, yeah. I got some Mrs. Butterworth on here today. I mean, what do you think that conversation was?
Well, and conversations that I believe there were two, if I recall correctly, one lasting 30 minutes, one lasting 50 minutes.
Yeah.
So as you said, these are extended conversations, and really right after the murders. When I think about this case, Tony, I think of someone that had such built up rage and anger and hate for so many. We actually got to see and read Koberger talk about his rage toward his father, how poorly he treated him and what a terrible person he was. And to me, this event would have been so cathartic for him, where he said, I'm cleansed. I'm cleansed now. I'm whole. I'm worthwhile. Look at what I've done. Look at how I conquered this. And I think that he called his parents probably in a great mood, just like we see in that selfie, and probably maybe even apologizing for recent past actions of not being very nice. And just, I would love to see, when was the last time he even called his parents? When the last time was he had a long conversation? Dollars to donuts, he didn't call him often.
I'm going to guess that too. And especially at that hour of the morning. It's a weird time to be calling mom and dad, unless mom and dad get up that early and you do too, and this is a normal call time. Maybe it is, but I would love to see if that's a pattern or if that's a really big one-off, and I want to know what happened. I mean, the parents, they could be called as witnesses here, so we may end up hearing about what that conversation was like once this trial takes place, could we not?
Well, they need to be called as witnesses. There's so much, I think, that they could testify about. I mean, we have everything from the K-bar knife. They need to be asked, did you order that? Was it your, did you ever use Koberger's computer? Because I think forensically they're going to show, we've seen it in the court documents, that it's his keystrokes on his computer. But they're going to have to completely exclude that anybody else in that family used his computer to take that K-bar knife, and they're going to want somebody in or everyone in the family really to say, it wasn't me, I didn't do it. And if they know Brian ordered it, we need that testimony. We have the ride back. How did that happen? I think it's very interesting that when he went to college, at least my understanding is, he went by himself. So why did he want Pops to come drive back with him? And what all was discussed? Was anything hidden on that drive? Remember, they took that circuitous route.
Yeah, that's true. It was a bizarre route. It was not necessary. They went like an extra. I used to know the number, but it's several hours out of the way to get to where they're going in Pennsylvania, which didn't make a whole lot of sense. But yeah, I wonder if, and I don't think the dad was aware if he did get rid of something along the way, but I could totally see it where Koberger was waiting to dispose of something along that route versus the route that went kind of around and out of town a little bit that he took the next morning, which I think is another possible place where the knife could end up being. I know there's actually a search party being put together to look for it now. But yeah, I think there's a lot of possibilities there. The conversation is what would be the most telling. And I really wonder what that was like for the dad and for mom, the sister. I mean, the fact that this family eventually goes out to his car in Pennsylvania and looks into it because they're that curious about, well, could it be him? That says a lot that that family is thinking that's a plausible possibility. I think most parents would be writing that, of course, that's impossible. It can't be my son. They thought it was. They thought it was. So they knew a bit more about Brian than, of course, everyone else did. They're the family. But what is it that they knew? What pieces of his personality made them think, yeah, he could possibly be the guy?
well, issues and issues of raising this kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, what he wrote in his own words and them knowing about that. And this was a kid that struggled in every way, shape, or form with weight, with heroin usage, with being bullied, you know, just having a really tough life. Believe me, I'm not feeling sorry for him. A lot of people have a tough life and they don't massacre other people when they feel like they want to. So I'm just saying, I don't think it was a stretch for them. And then how about the fact you have, you know, him going out and putting biological material in a plastic containers and throwing it away in somebody else's garbage, you know?
Yeah.
There were a lot of indicators.
Wearing gloves and it was not the the typical family get together, and it was not COVID time anymore either. So he can't use the argument, I'm being really careful at wearing gloves, you know, like some people were doing at that point where they're wearing hazmat suits into the Piggly Wiggly. There was other big pieces here too. The first time we got a chance to see the white Elantra in high definition. And I mean, if you watch it frame by frame, you can certainly see it in a lot greater detail, the way that it was presented. The way of driving, the way he was circling in at first, a little calm, the exit is what got me. After the murders, that car leaving, that was a determined drive to get the hell out of there.
Yeah, you pegged it. I mean, we've seen a lot of different footage on social media, but this was confirmed footage from that Ring camera across the way that made it very clear this vehicle. And not only that it came there, but it came there numerous times that morning and then 23 times. Mm-hmm. Now, remember in the affidavit, it was a dozen. Now we're up to 23. Again, not to confuse stalking with surveilling, in my opinion, this was him surveilling that house, understanding where his points of entry and exit would be, learning where the kids might have gone in and out, what their hours were. He was working just like BTK did. That's my opinion.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.